You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
My beautiful friends, I'm glad you're here. I so appreciate you listening. I'll start with the best movie ever. I'll talk about Tesla, not just the attacks on Tesla, but their stock, which a lot of people seem to be curious about. Tesla investing. I'll talk about communist takeovers, what's happening in Romania, Bill Burr, and other frauds. I'll talk about what AI thinks about my friendship with Chase Lambin. And I'll just go where the wind blows me. Actually, I'll talk about that too, getting blown, getting your mind blown. Maybe that's what I mean. You'll have to wait and see. Let's start with the best movie ever, which got really good Sunday night. Trump posted saying that Biden's pardons are null and void, in all caps, and that he didn't sign the pardons. And more importantly, he said old Joe didn't even know about them, adding that all the evidence that was destroyed from trying to put him in jail, trying to put Trump in prison for the rest of his life, that those people are on notice, that they're subject to investigation at the highest level. Kind of sounds like he's saying no one is above the law. And he said those same people are probably responsible for the pardons that were signed. In other words, accusing them of producing the documents and signing them themselves without the knowledge or consent of what he called the worst president in the history of our country. Crooked Joe is what he said. Can you believe this movie we're living through? Although, I don't know if what he's saying, what Trump is saying, would hold weight on appeal to the Supreme Court. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But our negotiator-in-chief could have cards up his sleeve that we're not aware of, like getting to discovery or just getting Dems to react. They usually do. And if they're reacting now, they're doing it after cleaning themselves up, because I'm sure a lot of them are pitting their chance. Especially if they believe, even a little bit believe, all their dictator talk, if they believe their own bullshit. There are a lot of people walking around D.C. today with an extra pair of drawers in their backpack. Ain't no doubt. With all these lower court judges making rulings against Trump and everything the bad guys are trying to do to stop him, I do wonder if maybe they're doing all that to provoke him, like trying to goad him into doing what they tried to say he was going to do. Would you put it past him? You know, try to force him into being somewhat of a dictator, to give him some ammunition, because they're not going to argue policies. That's not something they do. I don't know if the theater kids have that in them to talk about policies and stuff. And this latest judge, Boasberg is his name, the guy who said that flights bound for El Salvador and Honduras full of Venezuelan Trindiagua gangbangers had to be returned to the States immediately. dude was a FISA court judge. He wanted him to do a UE, planes in the air, with gangbangers on him. He was a FISA court judge, and he reviewed former FBI director James Comey. He reviewed his memos prior to their release in 2018. He oversaw the release of Hillary Clinton's emails, the ones she was willing to share anyway, the ones she didn't bleach bit out of existence. He also gave the FBI agent who altered a CIA email exchange, exonerating Carter Page, because he probably should have gone to jail, but he helped him avoid jail time by giving him probation. And get this, he was involved, this judge was involved with giving Ray Epps probation. He called him a victory of conspiracy theories. And if that wasn't enough, he also attended Trump's DC trial, just for the hell of it. He had no gavel in his hand. He wasn't wearing a robe. He just went to the trial just for fun, the way you and I might go to an Astros game. So yeah, he's neutral. He made the ruling on Saturday with flights in the air. Bring the gangsters back. Make a UE. Come on, judge. What a hero. Way to represent our interests. The American people would love to have more thugs with four names Venezuelans living among us. We need more property managers, right? Since so many people are now forced to rent thanks to skyrocketing real estate prices. Remember, they took over, I think it was 3 apartment complexes and basically managed the property with guns. And yeah, you stick it to Hitler, Judge. The average renter nowadays is 42 years old. In the 90s, it was 32. Isn't that something? Remember how I was saying last episode that the offals don't even know what money laundering is, much less able to recognize when it's happening? Some other words they've demonstrated they have no idea what they mean would be fascist and oligarchy, which that's got to be projection, not ignorance, because it takes, what, 10 seconds to look the words up? And it seems like projection, all the talk about oligarchs running the country, the most transparent government we've ever had, who will give interviews nonstop. Whereas the blue team's oligarchs never give interviews. Finding a George Soros interview is like finding a four-leaf clover or an interview with the Olsen twins. If I was him, I would have married Kate and Ashley. You know what Kanye was talking about there? For those not hip to the rap game, we're talking ninjas in Paris here. Kanye was saying that if he were Prince William, instead of marrying Kate Middleton, he would have married the Olsen twins. But you know what he should have done is released a song in 2018 telling that ginger fruitcake brother of William not to marry Meghan Markle. They got married a week after I did. The next Saturday, in fact, May 19th. We exchanged I do's on May 12th, me and Lady O. So update your calendars, please, so you can remind me when my anniversary is coming. Speaking of George Soros not giving interviews, it's equally hard to get an interview with George Soros the younger. Alex, I've heard that dude speak one time. He's like Jared Kushner. I've heard him speak one time. But Kushner was real smart, and Alex Soros sounded about as smart as Paris Hilton. I guess when you're inheriting all that money, you don't have any incentive to get smarter. But the Soros MO seems to be, just based on what I've read recently, funding a shadow government by way of NGOs. So we thought this billionaire was putting all this money into nonprofits, that he was some sort of philanthropist, but a lot of it's not his money. He would just kind of seed them and then get an infusion of cash from the government. And he wanted to install a puppet leader at the top eventually. So one of the things I read was that USAID gave George Soros $5 million for his Open Society Foundation, for his NGOs, and it went to Macedonia. Macedonia is a tiny country. It has the population of about San Antonio, less than 2 million people. And the money was for, get this, the money was for training citizens on how to protest based on Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Basically, to do what they're doing to Tesla right now, which I'll get to in a minute. So the taxes we're forced to pay under threat of being put in a cage go to a billionaire to generate unrest in a Balkan country 6,000 miles away. Can you believe that? The Balkans, for those of you who don't know, that's former Yugoslavia, now Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Romania, Slovenia, and a few others that I haven't been to. Southeast Europe, that's the Balkans. Very underrated vacation destination, I must say. I couldn't recommend Croatia highly enough. And I've always believed the reason that I think many Americans don't go there is because it's on the other side of Paris and Italy and Spain. But I would encourage you to fly a little further across the Adriatic Sea, if you can, because Croatia is unbelievably beautiful with a rich history. It's fantastic. You think what's going on, all these Tesla protests, you think that's organic? That people are so pissed about Musk firing I don't know that he's fired people directly, but he's certainly finding the waste of our tax dollars, and federal employees are losing their jobs. Do you think that would have people making signs and taken to the streets on a Tuesday afternoon? No, they're all fake. It's just another theater production put on by the theater kids, who I saw have the lowest approval rating ever recorded. Did you see that? 29%, which of course that was a CNN poll, so it's probably more like 20%, which would fit into the reality that we see, right? Every issue seems to be about 80-20, if not 90-10. I saw at one of the Tesla protests, they had this white dude who, reasonable looking guy, he was able-bodied and clean cut. You know, he looks like he showers daily. He'd have no problem getting a real job. What the hell was he doing there on a Tuesday afternoon? So some reporter walks up to him with a microphone and says, kind of in a mocking tone, like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And he said, "I'm getting paid for this." So I've talked about color revolutions. I believe I've talked about it. I know I've written about it in a blog article titled, "I Write Sins, Not Tragedies." If you want to give it a read, if you haven't already, it's about life in high school, and I draw parallels to life now in the present, what we're living through. But what happens in a color revolution, I know because I follow what happens overseas. It's how I got my name, right? What happens in a color revolution is you generate unrest among the populace, so it looks like there's a groundswell of support for your cause. And then your propaganda arm, the media, shows up at the scheduled meeting time to report on it and amplify your message. And what they try to do is tag the incumbent, the guy they want to overthrow, as being a dictator or a racist or a Nazi, especially a Nazi, whatever. Or a threat to democracy. That one's popular too. And if it succeeds, you then put the puppet you want in there. And the reason it's called a color revolution is because they're typically... is a color that's associated with the attempted overthrow of the government. So the protesters wear a certain color. Like in the Philippines in the 80s, they wore yellow. In Georgia, the nation state, not the state, their color was rose. In Ukraine, historically, it's been orange, but I think nowadays it's, they use the color of the flag, like yellow or blue. And they say they're for freedom and democracy, of course. And we're usually funding it with our tax dollars. How do we get CIA operatives in there? We come bearing gifts. I'm from the USAID, and I'm here for charitable reasons. For the record, maybe this is probably a good time for a disclaimer. When I talk about personal finance and investing and preface what I say with don't take investment advice from some podcaster, well, this is one in case feds are listening. I'm pretty sure our government would never use color revolution tactics against us. They wouldn't take control of the media and turn it into propaganda for the cause and silence their critics or orchestrate street protests where everybody wears the same color or call the opposition leader a Nazi dictator who needs to be removed. That would be awful. And for you not doing that, I'm very grateful. So don't SWAT me. Have you seen all the people getting swatted lately where the bad guys call in to say that there's a prominent, it's always a prominent conservative voice. And I think they say that they have their family at gunpoint at 3 a.m. and there's blood everywhere. And then a SWAT team shows up banging on your door with AKs in your face. So bad guys, if you're listening, I'm just a podcaster who thinks I can figure some things out. But I actually have no clue what I'm talking about. I wasn't there for any of the theater productions the kids put on, so don't SWAT me. I don't want a policeman with an AK banging on my door at 3 a.m. That would scare the shit out of my little girl. And I don't want that. Somebody could get killed. Not that you care. What kind of revolutionary would you be if you cared about people dying? Now, you know, something I thought about is... like, I always try to break things down to simplify them, to better understand them. But if these calls for swatting are coming from Ukraine, so that's one of the things they've figured out is that it's coming from an IP that's over there, which I don't know if they could be just using a VPN and saying that they're in Ukraine, but, you know, maybe they're over there. If you think about it, like, if this were thousands of years ago and you had this group that was trying to sabotage another tribe, by doing things like they're doing, like the swatting, and the leader of that tribe doing all this stuff were to visit the king of the castle, wouldn't he act like one of the things I said last episode is that Trump's composure in the meeting with Zelensky was impressive because Trump knows that the second guy who tried to kill him spent a lot of time in Ukraine. So knowing that, isn't it possible that Zelensky not only knows about that, but like, how would you act if you had to meet the guy you wanted dead? So they tried to kill him before he got into office, because if he gets into office, that might stop the money train and end the war. And Zelensky's probably concerned that if the money stops, then, you know, the history of Ukraine, they always overthrow and exile or kill the former leader. So if they're not happy with him, and they, you know, his life is on the line. So he either gets to continue living high on the hog, you know, he's probably not going to die. He's probably got serious security. He either gets to live high on the hog or that's it. And you're meeting with the guy that you want dead. Wouldn't you act exactly the way that he acted? I don't know. That just kind of makes sense to me. Just a theory. How many of your Facebook friends, like the single, childless women in their 40s and 50s, have changed their profile pics to say that they support Ukraine? How many of them, if they had a son, how many of them would want the war to continue? If they had a son of military age, because they're at the age where they could have a son that age, and that son lived in Kyiv, or God forbid, the Kursk region of Ukraine, how many of them would be against ending the war? That involves too much thought for a feeler, I realize. But we're living in dangerous times. The bad guys, they would unalive the two men who've done more for America than just about any human who came before them. The Tesla protests I alluded to a minute ago, I'm sure you've noticed Tesla stock has been rocked lately. If you're a Tesla stockholder, I am, full disclosure, you want to be sure you're investing for the long term. Because, well, markets are shaky right now, as to be expected, because there's a lot of uncertainty, which is, of course, anathema to Mr. Market. He doesn't like that. So you're going to see the VIX going crazy. VIX, that measures the volatility in the markets. VIX is a ticker symbol, VIX. It represents expected changes in the S&P 500, ticker symbol SPX for S&P 500. So the VIX looks at near-term price changes in the SPX. That's a good way to remember it. And it's forward-looking, so it gauges market sentiment, mainly the risk associated with stock market investing, the fear and concerns people have, that investors have. And it projects 30 days ahead because it looks at options contracts with 30-day expiration dates. But all that gets complicated and boring, so I'll leave that for the AM radio show hosts, and I'll keep it 100 with you, with two underlines. But what you want to know about Tesla is, one, it's run by Elon Musk, who he hasn't had a lot of business failures. Two, they heavily invest in AI and robotics. So Optimus is coming. And when Optimus is advanced, Optimus is a robot, when it's advanced to the point of making more Optimuses, Optimi, you say mouse, I say meese. Optimus, the robot, who a lot of smart people believe will be as much a part of our lives as the iPhone or the personal computer, let's say. It's a big deal. And three, I'll stop at three because like the VIX, I'd bore you with all the reading I've done on Tesla. But three, I've seen where they pretty much have a similar monopoly to what Apple has on iPhones with their charging stations, where you had to pay Apple 30% for the privilege of just getting your app on the OS to get your little square on there on the GUI. You have to give up a third of your revenue for every dollar you bring in, every purchase made. A GUI is a graphical user interface. It's a pretty common one. And I think it's known outside the software world, so I probably didn't need to say that. But yeah, it's kind of like stat for the medical community. Some industries' jargon becomes universally known in time, I've noticed. But I always try to be conscious when I'm using acronyms, because nothing worse than you're talking to somebody and they start spitting the stuff they talk about at work all day, not realizing that you don't work there and you have no idea what they're talking about. That seems like I want to say I have a conversation maybe once a week where I'm like, what does that mean? And I have to interrupt and ask. But from what I understand, Tesla will have, if they don't already, a deal where other EV manufacturers of electric vehicles, EV means electric vehicles, of course. Here's another one. They'll have to pay Tesla for access to those charging stations. Tell you what, let's do one more. So four, they're poised to be a big player in self-driving cars. If you don't think that's coming, where your kids and grandkids will no longer need to take driver's ed because no way you'd turn over the reins to AI to let it control your steering wheel and the brakes and everything else, consider, we do this all the time and we don't think twice about it. Every time you get in a plane, you're basically leaving your life in the hands of computers. I've never been in a cockpit, although I have seen a grown man naked. And I do like movies about gladiators. You know, we get on an airplane and we get a greeting from the stewardess, a word I'm bringing back because I like it. For you youngsters, back before your time, that's what we called flight attendants when they were attractive, back when they were attractive. But you take your seat on a plane without even knowing who the pilot is. And unlike an Uber driver, who we also put our life in the hands of, for a pilot, you don't even know if he's got a 4.97 rating. He could be a disgruntled tranny for all we know, sitting there uncomfortable the whole flight because he's sitting on his D&Bs. Anyway, you won't have a problem with self-driving cars, is what I'm trying to say. Especially once they prove that the likelihood of you dying in a car accident is much less with AI than with human drivers. You know how you have a much higher probability of dying on the way to the airport than on an aircraft? The probability of dying in a car accident is high. There's something like 40,000 people who die in car accidents every year. And that's just in the U.S. The odds of dying in a car accident versus, say, cancer, like a lot of us will die of cancer, those odds are like 1 in 7. And fortunately, there are some things that we can do to prevent it. Some things, not always, of course, but the odds that you'll die of cancer, that being your cause of death, is about 1 in 7. And that's much higher than a car accident. But dying in a car accident is about 1 in 100. So over the course of your life, you have about a 1% chance of your car becoming your coffin. That's a terrible thought to ponder, I know. So forget what I said. But I'm saying all this to hopefully enrich myself, because I want you to invest in Tesla to make the stock price go up. I'm kidding. I am totally kidding, of course. But yes, once self-driving cars prove they're safer than humans, human drivers, there'll be a lot more duck face seatbelt selfies, because you'll just be sitting there. And that'll, of course, create more inequality for commies to complain about, because what you do with your time determines how your life works out and how successful you'll be. That's why I've always followed Zig Ziglar's advice and turned my car into a mobile university. RIP Zig. We spend so much time on the road. I mean, you can get the equivalent of a 4-year degree just sitting in traffic. A 4-year degree with zero leftist indoctrination. You scale that out over a lifetime. What you do with all that time you're sitting in your self-driving car, that is going to really increase the disparity between, or should I say, it's going to further separate the knowledgeable from the know-it-alls, you know, the know-nothings. It'll further exacerbate the inequality problem, at least from a communist perspective. And as long as we continue not to teach the horrors of communism in schools, opting instead to teach about Hitler, we'll see another attempt at a communist revolution once those who are too young to have witnessed this latest one are old enough to vote. I've got a crazy story from high school about a book we read that was supposed to teach us about Nazism and how it manifests in society, where everybody gives us a sign with their hand. I think it was called The Wave. And they walked around school and you weren't cool if you didn't do this thing with your hand. So anyway, that was supposed to teach you to be able to be wide awake when something like that happens. And just like driver's ed, you know, a lot of people aren't paying attention, so they don't learn. It's the old thing, like people complain about, oh, we need to educate our youth and we need to pour more money into education. But you can't give somebody an education. It's a two-way street. Somebody's got to give it and somebody's got to take it. And not everybody's going to take it. And there are a lot of times I didn't pay attention in school. If my daughter is 11 and needs help with homework, I don't know, I'm going to probably call mom in to help. Yeah, there's a game on the Wii called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? I'm pretty sure a fifth grader would dominate anybody. Anybody our age. Isn't it funny, maybe ironic, that the bad guys have started keying Teslas and vandalizing dealerships? Is that the first climate change domino to fall? Let's say a Martian landed here and was like, tell me about all this climate change stuff you've allocated trillions of dollars to. And somebody says, yeah, sure. You see, there's a man who started a car company trying to revolutionize the car industry and wanted to reduce car emissions more than any other human on our planet. And the Martian's like, wow, did he succeed? Yes, yeah, he did just that. Oh, cool, the Martian says. Tell me more about him. All right, well, he also started a company that makes brain chips to cure blindness. Oh, that's interesting. Anything else? Yeah, he runs a company called SpaceX. Oh, what do they do? Well, right now he's sending a team into space to rescue stranded astronauts. Oh, that's cool, says the Martian. Yeah, he's also building tunnels. He's all about efficiency. Maybe best demonstrated when he acquired Twitter. And the Martian's like, whoa, he bought Twitter? That seems odd. Why buy another social media company? Oh, he wanted to save free speech in the Western world, in the Western part of the world. Oh, did he? The Martian asks. Yeah, he did that too. Anything else? Well, he'll probably be one of the leaders in self-driving cars and Optimus robots and some other stuff. The Martian's like, that's incredible. Are y'all doing everything you can to protect this man from harm? No, Martian, I'm on the blue team. We're actually trying to ruin him and would kill him if we could. Oh, God, what would make you want to do that? Well, he's leading a team of AI geniuses that have the ability to identify fraudulent and wasteful spending of our tax dollars. Well, that's a good thing, no? No, that's not a good thing. It's mean. It's cutting all the programs that made it look like we were doing good for people. You see, we signal our virtue, and we've been doing that as long as we've been alive. And it works great because our supporters get to think well of themselves too. You see, they pretend to care just like we do. And they either can't tell we're acting or don't give a shit that we're acting because they're pretending to care too. And Martian says, well, how do they do that? Well, it depends on the issue. One time they all posted a black square on Instagram, or they'll put a foreign country's flag in their bio. Like when you look down on the world from Mars, it's on the other side of the world, and they put their flag of that little country in their bio and might change their profile picture. What more can you ask than that? Oh, okay. But do they actually do anything for the causes they support, like this Elon Musk fella? Well, yeah, not that I can think of. So they give money then? They're much more charitable than the other team? No, they're not charitable. You're kidding. Surely they do something, like maybe take to the streets and protest? Yes, that's what they do. Okay, so at least you have some true believers. Well, it's tough to say. We do have to pay them. Jesus, the Martian might say. Like, what about the actors who live on the left coast? Surely they can use their acting skills to persuade the public to your side. Give you some money. Well, no. This last election, we actually had to pay them. It's a tough battle. You see, the guy we're attacking, the one doing all the good for humanity, He's more concerned about the reality of goodness, not the perception of it. Oh, man, the Martian might say, like, you're going to need more useful idiots. maybe you can import the third world, or make sure nobody has to prove who they are when they vote, or lower the voting age. All right, no more dialogue. So that's the Martian talking to somebody on the blue team. You know, the bad guys would lower the voting age to 16 tomorrow if they could, and allow every Venezuelan gang member and their mom to vote if they could get away with it. And the good guys, they'd probably just as soon raise the voting age to 26. One of the guys I coach range in age from 23. That's my youngest client now. They range in age from 23 to 48. And this particular client, he's 28. And he was saying how he's come to realize how stupid he was when he was 21. And he didn't attribute that to me, like the self-development. You know, he didn't attribute it entirely to me or anything, but I like to think I played a part. If you want coaching, I've got a spot for you. Speaking of objectively, if that's possible to do, if you've ever considered personal coaching, you might want to try it just for a few months. My average client's been with me probably 3.5 years. Two of them I've had for 5 or 6 years. Anyway, him saying that he was a total moron at 21 relative to what he knows now, it really got me thinking. So how in the world do we let 21-year-old guys determine the future of the country? Is it because they fight our wars? If so, that would be a good enough reason, I think. I mean, maybe we could restrict voting to those in the military. I don't know. But people aren't getting smarter. You know, that's been proven. We're all cyborgs now. We have answers in our pocket. So that's what makes us somewhat smart. But compared to 40 years ago, we are not more intelligent today. But yeah, if that's not bad enough, we turn the future of our country over to 21-year-olds who inevitably discover when they're about 30 that they didn't know anything when they were 21. If that's not bad enough, have you interacted with the average 18-year-old American female? They vote too. And of course, there are exceptions to what I'm saying, that maybe we ought to raise the voting age, of course, right? I mean, there are going to be some people who should definitely be voting when they're 18 even. But I've always kind of had a problem with blanket laws. Like, you can't drive until you're 16, and that applies to everybody. Because I was mature enough to drive when I was 13 or 14. But then I got to high school, and I knew kids that shouldn't have been able to drive till they were 21, or at least 18, because we're all different. And I'm sure you remember, like, there are guys when you were in college, and they'd have 3 or 4 beers, and there'd be no way you'd get in his passenger seat. And then others, it's not a problem. Like, I trust you're good. You tell me you're good. I know your character. And yeah, I don't know another way than to have blanket ages for when you could drive. I guess it'd take too long to try to get to know every would-be driver. But hell, they've all got to take driver's ed, so I guess it could be done. So AI and robotics, all that is happening so fast. I know just about all of you have familiarized yourself with AI tools by now, but if you haven't, I would strongly encourage you to do so. And it doesn't matter if you're 75 or 15 or 9, because much like the internet, it's going to impact your life, and you don't want to be scrambling 7 years from now trying to catch up. So at a minimum, I would get familiar with querying and prompting, learning what prompts are effective with AI. I'm pretty sure I've told you I now use Perplexity AI more than Google. It is that good. Check this out. So this is what I wanted to tell you that blew my mind. I asked Perplexity how Brad D'Antonio and Chase Lambin know each other. And this is what it gave me. It said, they've been close friends since meeting in 9th grade. Their friendship began when Brad introduced himself after being impressed by Chase's confidence and energy at a dance club. Over the years, they bonded through shared experiences, including baseball, personal growth, and storytelling. Brad often shares stories about Chase's baseball career and their enduring camaraderie, describing him as his top dog and a source of pride. How about that? And you might say, yeah, you've written about Chase. You've talked about him. You've had him on the podcast twice. And AI's job is to scour the web for everything ever written or produced and then summarize it in less than 2 seconds and feed it back to you. But here's the thing. Me being impressed by Chase's energy and confidence when we met, that's true. I remember I'm watching him in my mind's eye getting after it on the dance floor at Shelter, this all-ages club we used to go to. And I was impressed by his energy and confidence. But that's not something I've ever said. Those words have never come out of my mouth. And I've never written it anywhere. But AI not only articulated and summarized in seconds our friendship better than I ever could have. Or maybe I could have, but it would have taken me a while. I couldn't do it in 2 seconds. But it came up with adjectives to describe what I was thinking that I've never expressed. Maybe that's evidence of simulation number 15,572. I don't know, but I was just mind blown. Let me share with you maybe the most impressive response to a GPT prompt that I've ever seen. It was regarding the most deep truth you know, meaning AI knows, but most people are unaware of. So it'd be like prompting him, hey, tell me a deep truth that you, AI, are aware of that most people are not aware of. And here's what it said. It said, a life lived correctly is brutally difficult by default, not because the world is unfair or cruel, but because genuine growth requires continuously confronting the unknown. Most people see friction and obstacles as signals they're off track. The reality? That friction is the very proof you're stepping into new territory. If you're not regularly feeling out your depth, you're coasting, stagnant. The deepest truth? Discomfort isn't just inevitable, it's essential. Chase friction relentlessly. Whoa. Let's go back to communist takeovers. Have you paid attention to what's happening in Romania lately? So, in case you're not familiar, the guy who won their election, he regularly talks bad about the EU. He doesn't like the EU. And if you're a regular listener of mine, you probably think rightfully so, but because, well, free speech and what's the issue with talking about something you're not happy with? Well, you can't do that in Europe, evidently, especially can't do it and get elected. Bad guys don't like that. So they decided to have another election, you know, instead of him winning, except this time they kicked that free-speaking far-right winger off the ballot, which I don't know if that sounds familiar. 3 years of lawfare trying to get your political opponent off the ballot. 3 years of lawfare, 2 assassination attempts that are public knowledge that we know of, at least. Not that we know anything about the would-be assassins or the, yeah, would-be. I mean, if they could have succeeded, I guess you call them would-be assassins. Is that what constitutes an assassin? Do you have to actually do it to be an assassin to succeed? I don't know. But yeah, we'll likely never know anything about them. You do realize, my beautiful listeners, that we're never going to see anything new regarding Epstein or the JFK files. That's not going to happen. You don't kill people and leave an email thread that says we're going to kill Trump on July 13th. We've got this kid we've groomed and he's an idiot and we're feeding him pills and drugs and one of the guys in our PA field office is meeting him at the gun range. It's the same with Epstein and JFK, whoever. I mean, I would encourage you to lower your expectations. If you want a smoking gun, you're better off going to the gun range. In the case of the Trump assassination, where they quickly cremated the guy, the Thomas Crooks fella, so we'll never know what they pumped him full of. And, you know, in a communist revolution, it's often felt by, or it's, to those paying attention, they feel like it's being done in front of their face and they can't believe it. But progressives, they don't ignore history entirely because they're not so bright. They're unoriginal. And so they need an example to follow, like Rules for Radicals or a manifesto. So they do learn a little from those who've come before them. Like the Nazis documented everything, and we therefore were able to conduct the Nuremberg trials, which I've actually visited that courtroom, actually, in Nuremberg, Germany. My favorite German lives there inside the castle walls. They still, in Nuremberg, they still have the castle walls up encircling the old town. It's really cool. Or yet, Jörg. But it's eerie in that courtroom. But I do recommend visiting. They also have a Third Reich Museum where it's like half built because Hitler wasn't able to finish it, and they turned it into a museum. It's really fascinating. Anyway, many of those Nazis, at least the ones, those prominent ones that weren't able to flee to Argentina and take on a new identity, they were sentenced to be hanged. They were killed. So those today who are using Nazi tactics, they sure as hell wouldn't put in writing what they're doing. And we live in a digital world now, so they're going to do what Hillary did, because it'd be very hard to coordinate any of your sinister, nefarious plans without text or email nowadays, right? So you use BleachBit to wipe your communications from existence. You mean like wipe it with a cloth or something? Yeah, Hillary. Have you wiped your server with a cloth lately? I'm sure that's a question worth asking. Next question, Madam Clinton. Have you ever dusted the bookshelf where you keep your law books? Bonehead. Bald head, scallywag. You know where scallywag, you know where that term, it has political origins, actually, the term scallywag. It was used to refer to South white Southerners in the South in mid-19th century. It meant loser or lowlife. Well, initially it referred to animals who were worthless. They called them scallywags. But the word evolved, as many words do, to mean not just a worthless animal, but a worthless person. You know, now it's more used in the African-American community, probably. A lot of rappers use the word in their song. I like Project Pat. Did you know Project Pat is Juicy J's older brother? Every episode, I aim to make you a better Jeopardy contestant, should you ever get the call from Ken to be on the show. My favorite example of a word evolving in my lifetime is sucks. Like, you suck, or it sucks, that sucks. When I was a kid, that's not something you could say, because everybody knew what was being sucked by implication. But nowadays, you not only hear a sixth grader say it, but a lot of times you'll hear the sixth grade teacher say it to the kid. Like, looking at a paper he's written and saying, "Little Billy, you know, this sucks, you could do better." Everybody says it now. Like, it no longer refers to what it is, S and a D. It's wild to an old man like me. I think douchebag is probably the same way. I remember I was riding to my girlfriend's, we were going to her grandparents' house one time with her family, and her little brother, he was probably, I don't know, 9, and he called somebody a douchebag, and his dad got so pissed. But people call each other D-bags all the time now. And D-bags aren't as prevalent as they once were. Yeah, it's just one of the worst. Sucks. It's lost all meaning. It just means bad. But why is that got to be a bad thing instead of the best thing ever? You should live there in Tuboca, ladies. Don't translate that. It reminds me of VIP. So when I'm popping bubbly in the VIP, I'll turn to the guy next to me who went to the high school in the ritzy part of Houston. And I'll ask him, like, "Hey, man, do you know what VIP stands for?" "Yeah, bro, this is the VIP. We're in it." And I'm like, "Now, do you know what the V and the I and the P, like, what they mean, what they stand for?" And, you know, he'll ask me if I'm high. People don't know what VIP means anymore. The folks in D.C., like the bleach bit and taking a hammer to your Blackberries, they're going to do whatever it takes. So there are a lot of things that we will never know. All you can do is make sure the bad guys never get close to the levers of power again. And try not to let it make you bitter. You got to keep on keeping on. Stay cheerful. You're probably just like me. You're seeing in your news feeds the women without children changing their profile pics to support Ukraine or whatever. I wouldn't waste my time engaging with those folks. Not because they're dumb. They think you're dumb, of course, but the media assigns them their opinions, and they think you're dumb because, well, they haven't only been assigned their opinion, they've also been told you're dumb. You'll be called climate denier, racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, and all the rest of them. They think you'll get emotional once I defriend you. You'll be upset. No, I wouldn't. Your willingness to defriend me kind of tells me all I need to know about you. I would say if it were possible you could learn anything from them, engage, but it's been proven time and time again. You already know what they think. It's predictable. And they're not going to know nor care to know what you think. When masculine women and feminine men are sitting on the couch, they like fiction. I talked about this last time. They're just as likely to turn on CNN or MSNBC as they are Lifetime. The same way young men and boys will watch pro wrestling and some of them know it's scripted, but it's like they want to be fooled, like want to be lied to, lie to me, daddy. Women and gays do the same with reality TV. Some of them know it's scripted, but they don't care. And the bad guys, you know, they're filled with hate and intolerance. All they do is project. Why do you think they call the other team Nazis? It's because what they're doing is Nazi-like. If the Soviets were still around, they'd hate Lenin and Stalin because they're copying their playbook. They're debanking and the show trials and silencing the opposition, trying to kill them, the political opponent. Have you thought about one of the reasons they so loudly proclaim to hate Putin, but never the most notorious communist, the most notorious alive anyway, the guy over there in China? Couldn't that just be simple projection? When you're racist, call others racist. When you hate women, allow men to compete in women's sports and change in their locker rooms. Or kill femininity by way of feminism. Try to do a Navalny on Trump. I don't know why I'm laughing. I just think it's all so ridiculous. And I think it's best to deal with it by laughing, I guess. It's the best medicine. Remember when Xi Jinping, remember when he came to visit San Francisco last year? Imagine, and they cleaned everything up. Imagine if Putin came to visit one of our big conservative cities riddled with rampant drug addiction and homelessness. Well, that's a bad example. Because I don't think there is one. But let's say Putin came to visit Trump in New Orleans. It's not that big, but it's in a red state. And they certainly have their share of homelessness and addicts. And let's say Florida. And because Florida, you know, Florida's red and they've got a conservative governor. Let's say Vladimir Putin flies into Miami and Ron DeSantis cleans up all the homelessness and makes the streets pristine for Putin's arrival. And homelessness is gone for the week that Putin is going to be driven through the streets in his motorcade so he can't see anything. And then he leaves and goes right back to a crime infested feces dump with needles and tents all over the sidewalks. Do you think the media would be all over that? Find out how the hell he was able to rid the city of all that in short order, only for it to return once Putin left? Answer, yes. I think it'd be the biggest scandal in America. But there are so many scandals that probably should be the biggest scandals ever in America that are getting overlooked because they are ardent supporters of the blue team. We could really use more scandal-free presidencies like Obama's. Am I right? You know what would be funny is, like, if you were to walk in on an awful watching the movie we're living through, and they're sitting there, cat purring in their lap. It's Friday night, wine glass full, and you pause the TV to explain to them what's happening, like what's going on in the movie. Do you think they'd be grateful? Or, you know, they'd think you're mansplaining, but at least they now know what's going on in the movie. Do you think they'd say, oh, I get it now, thank you. You're so smart, thank you for explaining that to me. Has that ever happened? You ever pause a movie so you can explain to your woman what's going on? And she says, oh, you're so smart. Thank you for explaining. No, that doesn't happen. That's not a real thing. That is fiction too. Well, the movie we're watching now, it's not even that complicated. It's not that hard to figure out, but these awfuls don't have anyone to turn to explain to them what's going on. And if you hate men, you wouldn't even know somebody that could help you. You couldn't call a friend. You don't have anybody to help you understand what's happening. And so they don't want to know. As I've said, it's all team play. Do you think you could convince a Yankee fan, like somebody who roots for the Yankees, to suddenly become a Red Sox fan? You could not. Now, you could probably convince a player to change teams if the money was good enough. See Anna Navarro, who is the Republican version of a transgender. But this is politics, not baseball. You might be able to snag... Yeah, you could do it in both. Like, you might be able to snag Babe Ruth or Johnny Damon, A-Rod. Well, A-Rod didn't play for the Red Sox, did he? He would have. But you could think of Johnny Damon, you could think of them like Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger. But you're not going to convince those who aren't on the take to switch. Those are the fans. They're going to root for the blue no matter who team, as long as they're wearing pinstripes. And with regard to Epstein, I want to talk about Epstein. In all likelihood, that dude was a very sophisticated blackmailer. Like, nobody could explain how he made hundreds of millions of dollars. And I know it's been rumored he was working for Mossad, which is, Mossad is the, it's basically Israel's CIA. But what are the odds that all that sophisticated, all those cameras and stuff he had set up, his own island and everything was wired, what are the odds he only had one client? Israel. I don't think that, The dude had paintings of Bill Clinton and George Bush hung in his house. Bill Clinton was wearing heels in his townhouse in Manhattan. Why would you do that? Peter Thiel has said he doesn't believe you rise to the upper echelons of American politics unless they have compromising evidence on you. And I don't know if that's true or even if that's necessary to rise in global politics, but it is odd that just about everybody in power during the revolution was either gay or closeted gay or a masculine woman. There are quite a few gays on the good guys' side, though. Thiel be one of them. Guy Benson. Richard Grenell. Who else? Scott Pressler. And quite a few. In case you're a first-time listener who happens to be an exception guy, or when you hear a generalization and personalize it and think, does this generalization apply to me personally? Or you're one of those, like maybe you have a friend named Twee and she always drives y'all to lunch in her minivan and you get there and you get to the restaurant and she parallel parks without even using her side mirrors, making it look easy. And therefore, Asian women are great drivers. What are you even talking about? Your generalization obviously isn't true. You are outing yourself as a dummy and probably think I'm outing myself as a racist because any criticism of a racial group besides your own, if you're white like me, you are racist, a revolutionary bad guy would say. But we've allowed so many feminine men in power. Tim Walz, Doug Emhoff by way of marriage. And if you don't think they have a say in how the country is run, if you don't think spouses do, then you think Jill should have been Surgeon General instead of running cabinet meetings. Remember Whoopi Goldberg? She suggested that Jill Biden should be Surgeon General. And then probably what happened is one of the producers whispered into one of the other geniuses on the Views panel. One of them must have been told, hey, tell Whoopi that Dr. Jill isn't a real doctor. Maybe suggest she could be education secretary or something. And that's what happened. But who are the other femmes ruling over us? Adam Schiff. If you think that dude's never S-D, you are watching too many Lifetime movies. Chuck Schumer. Or, you know, think about this. Think about the strength of character it would take for our first black president who became the most powerful, possibly the most famous man to ever walk the earth and be able to withstand every gorgeous Halle Berry looking woman who ever flirted with him for 8 years. Well, not just 8 years, 8 years and beyond, when his wife looks like a dude. If they had waited for a reason to give him the Nobel Peace Prize, they should have given it to him for that. That is, unless he's swinging from both sides of the plate or secretly plays baseball swinging from only one side. If he secretly played baseball, he wouldn't throw like a girl. Remember when he would throw out the first pitch at Major League Baseball games? How many straight guys do you know who throw like that? He would be the first that threw like a girl. The man's been known to accomplish a few firsts, so you got to give him that. How about Justin Trudeau? That gal there, that's a flaming red hot. You know, they actually make keto-friendly flaming red hots now. You believe that? What about across the pond, that Keir Starmer fella? Very posh. Have you seen the video of him throwing a punch? He was hitting a bag one time. He had gloves on. And he was doing a promo for the Labour Party. And have you ever had that dream where you punch a guy and it's like punching a pillow? Like you don't feel anything and you don't do any damage to the other guy? Am I the only one who has that dream? I don't have it anymore, but I'd probably have it once a year when I was growing up. Anyway, Keir Starmer, it looks like that for him in real life. Like a fruit cup who's trying to, his punch wouldn't hurt. Like it wouldn't hurt David Hogg if you punched him in the chest. Or how about the president of France? I'm going to be careful on this one because I think people have gotten sued for what they say about the president's quote-unquote wife for not having evidence. What we can say is if Macron's spouse were in high school with Macron, I know his spouse was his teacher, I believe, but for kicks, let's say that person were in high school and they had a vote for most likely to be successful, he'd probably win, Macron. And if they had a vote for most likely to be tranny, let's just say they'd both go home a winner. I think I was careful there. But let me throw another disclaimer. I don't know what gives these dudes, what excites them, what gives them a chub, but you know, or if they're attracted to men. I really don't care either way. I want everybody to love who they want. I just know that for an actor, pretending to be straight would be easy for them because they've probably been doing it all their life. And to play the game at the highest level, you've got to be able to garner as much support as you can. You need the votes. Funny story about that. My buddy was playing, I guess it was in spring training, and Adam Dunn was there. And what did they ask him? Something about women and like one night stands or something. And I think he said, don't quote me, this is hearsay, but I want to say he said that he doesn't have one night stands because he needs the vote, the all-star votes. So he keeps in touch with everybody. He's a big dude. He actually went to high school where my wife did in Porter, Texas, New Caney High School. And he was a stud. I think I've talked about him before. Statistics say it's better to be straight. You'll get more votes that way. And you want to act as though you believe in God, of course, in America at least. And it doesn't count if you get shot and don't die. Of course, you're going to believe in God then. Or if your political career started by joining a church with 20,000 members and Oprah happens to be one of them. I knew a realtor one time. He went to this big church in Houston religiously, but I could tell he wasn't a good man. Like there's no way he was a man of God. Well, who am I to say, right? But yeah, he may have had an incredible relationship with God, but if I had to put my house on it, I would bet no chance. He just wasn't a good guy. He was full of himself. He was always paranoid, worried constantly. And doesn't that tell you something about people? Like when they're constantly worrying and then they try to pass themselves off as a Christian? Because if you have a solid relationship with the man above, you'd at least have a little bit of faith that God has a plan for you, a plan for your life. But this dude had convinced maybe two or three women at this mega church that he was godly. And unless you got to know him, I probably could see where you'd be fooled by the facade. But those two women would refer him enough business to make a living. And I actually think he was closeted, but I don't keep in touch with him, so who knows? I really hate to hear about guys staying in the closet because I would think the inner turmoil would be devastating and cause way more problems than if you just came out. And we see the next crop of actors on the blue team, the blue no matter who leaders, they're going to great lengths to stay in the closet. David Hogg and Harry Sisson. I don't know if you've seen what Harry Sisson has done, but he started posting just last week pictures with a woman who doesn't show her face and like she rubs her hand on his face. He's trying real hard to prove he's trying to demonstrate he's straight, but further proving that he's not by trying to prove he is. It's really crazy. I was accused the other day of throwing a hissy fit. This is a Twitter beef story. The guy's name was Paul on X. Paul doesn't show his face, so I was dealing with someone who was anonymous and faceless, but he quoted Trump saying that we had given Ukraine $350 billion and said that Trump was the biggest liar in the world. And I said, could be. He's definitely hyperbolic, albeit directionally correct. He's also probably the most honest president we've had in my lifetime, certainly the most transparent. And he said, you just admitted that he lied about the $350 billion funding to Ukraine and about U.S. funding more than Europe, but then say he's the most honest president. F me, that's a sad state of affairs. And I said, nah, F you, because you're faceless and probably a communist. And Paul said, ha ha, you could just say you're right rather than throwing a hissy fit and completely ignoring the content of my comment. This is how I see it. It's always good to know what kind of person you're dealing with. And when he said that I was having a hissy fit, which I've never had, I knew I was talking to someone with a little bit of sugar in his tank. No man accuses other men, no masculine man accuses other men of having a hissy fit. That's not something we do. So I said, I've never had a hissy fit. That makes you a liar. And I said, you're fun, Paul. You need a pick on here. I don't usually reply to the faceless. And he said, he quoted me saying, nah, F you, because you're faceless and probably a communist, not a hissy fit, ? We'll have to agree to disagree on that one. And I said, different senses of humor, I guess. Have you had your testosterone checked? And he said, you know what he said? He said, what a weird response. And I liked that. I liked it because he made me feel good. It feels good being right sometimes. But it was like arguing with Harry Sisson. Have you seen what he's been doing? I shared earlier. It's getting out of hand. But that's what communists do. Like, you can't, they tell you not to trust your eyes and ears. Trust them instead. Calling Harry Sisson straight, that'd be like calling Oprah skinny, pre-Ozempic. I've been talking about lie detection these past few episodes. Susan Rice and Al Schmidt, controlling facial movements and controlling your emotions. The thing is, where they screw up is you can practice just about every emotion when you're rehearsing, when you're practicing telling your story. But it's very hard to rehearse for telling a lie when it's game time, when you have all the bright lights and cameras on you and millions of people watching at home. It's hard to control that smile when you're trying to bullshit in your interview. Imagine if you were interviewing Al Schmidt for a management position at your company. I included the 60 minutes of propaganda link in the show notes of the last episode. But imagine you're interviewing Al Schmidt, and he's sitting across from you, and he starts making those faces when he answers your question. Yes, in a democracy. You got to see the clip. You would know this guy's full of it. Or, well, let's even better, let's say Tim Walz comes over to your house. He wants to marry your daughter or your sister. You'd be like, get out of my house, tampon Tim. You know you shouldn't be dating women. And I'd show him the door. I'd be friendly. I mean, I wouldn't wish him harm. I'd probably wish him good luck with dude's butts. What many of us still need to get, I feel like a lot of people don't understand, that communism is built on lies. It is the tool that they use more than anything. They're not going to care if they're caught in a lie. They don't have shame. You know, if they're on video saying the opposite of what they're telling you, they're not going to be embarrassed. You know, when you call them out for gaslighting, they'll lie to your face and just hope that everyone buys into their delusion. How many men during the DEI revolution were elevated to positions of power whose main attribute was they were pretty good at pretending to be a woman? A lot of them. Or imagine you're interviewing a spokesperson for your company and you've narrowed it down to two. And the two people are Karine Jean-Pierre and Caroline Leavitt. And you watch them answer four or five questions and you rally the decision makers and somebody says, I think we should hire KJP. She seems more competent. he probably wouldn't keep his job nowadays, right? He'd be shown the door and said, good luck with dudes' butts. So what are you going to do? Ask, where's your integrity? Like when they accuse you of doing what they're actually doing, they don't care. Truth and integrity, those are not their values. In fact, the truth must be destroyed for them to achieve their aims. And they'll redefine words if they have to. Remember workplace violence when that terrorist killed people in Texas here? Or in early 22 when the communists tried to change the definition of a recession? Historically, it was two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. They, of course, broadened the definition, allowing for nuance in this case, because it supports their narrative. Merriam-Webster, is that what it's called? They changed all the gender-related terms during the revolution. That's a real thing that happened. The definition of racism was changed. It went from what racism is to include systemic oppression and institutional racism. You know what the explanation for that was? Why they changed it? It was that they said the change was prompted by a reader who noted the inadequacy of the prior definition. That's it. That means one commie can change the definition of words. Even colorblind was redefined, saying that while being colorblind can mean freedom from racial prejudice, it may also suggest a refusal to acknowledge racial inequities. There's more. What else? Oh, probably the biggest one, the most important one at least, was that was given a new definition. In case you had any doubt, we were in the midst of a communist takeover. That word is equity. That was the big one. They couldn't continue to use the word equality because that would mean equality of opportunity, which is not what communism is about. They want equality of outcomes. This Biden is the best Biden. He's running circles around us. We have trouble keeping up with him. Meanwhile, Biden reminds everybody over 35 years old of either a grandparent or their grandma's friend who suffered from dementia and would get real mean between naps. They call you a Nazi to justify them acting like Nazis, to throw you off the scent and do whatever they want. Accuse them of, they're going to accuse the others of that which they are doing. You're probably tired of me saying this, but if you think the blue no matter who's wouldn't silence you or bankrupt you, throw you in a camp or prison, or even a lot of them would have you dead, they'd be fine with that. If you don't realize that, then you're not paying attention. Did you see Bill Burr say free Luigi? How much of a dummy is that guy? And since he's such a good actor, we know which team he plays on. He's one of the bad guys with his fake accent. He pulled a Prince Harry and married a POC and turned into a fruitcake. All right, let me switch gears. On a lighter note, have any of you not yet downloaded an app that maps out the stars in the sky? For those of you who have, is that not the coolest thing ever? I feel like it's so cool that it's something we should be talking about, and that's why I'm talking about it. I downloaded the Skyview Light app. I know there are a few other free ones, but Skyview Light works really well. And if you have kids, no brainer, download the app and start showing them what is happening in the night sky, because it is amazing. And to think, if I had died at age 43, which I nearly did, I do believe God kept me here for a reason that I'm determined to figure out, but that's for another episode. To think I could have lived on Earth for 43 years and not known that big bright star right above me in the sky was actually Jupiter. I can't believe it. Or that one with a slight red tint to it. I always kind of suspected it was Mars. But you couldn't get that kind of information anywhere. You couldn't get it confirmed. Not that I know of. And now you can just point your phone at the sky and boom, there's Jupiter and there's Mars. It's the coolest thing ever. But I'll get excited to show my daughter. Every time we take a walk after dark, I pull my phone out, which isn't often. She hits the sack pretty early, but she may as well be, for her, I mean, she may as well be, I don't know, looking at a fire truck, because she's not as awed as I am. But I'm like, no, this is the coolest thing ever. I've been looking at fire trucks all my life, and you've seen a ton of them, but this is a new thing. It's tough to convey to a little one. But maybe I'm weird because I've always been obsessed with space and the enormity of it all. Did you know the closest star to us? It's called Alpha Centauri. Did you know that star, the closest one to us, is trillions of miles away? Trillions with a T? And that it's about the same size as the sun? If you have ever wondered if there's not good and bad kind of built into this existence, a yin and a yang, consider the sun. You know, we need it to live, and we should get out in the sun for optimal health. You need some sun on the skin. It elevates your mood and gives you much-needed vitamin D, which is what was killing a bunch of people during COVID. They were deficient in vitamin D. God, I hope the truth about COVID comes out soon. What's crazy is even if it did, there'd still be diehards wearing masks in 2029. You're not going to stop them. They're not going to believe what they tell you. There's a lot of people who still believe in the Russian collusion hoax or the fine people hoax and all other bunch of other stuff. But then if you spend, here's the other side of it. If you spend too much time in the sun, it'll give you cancer and kill you. Or you look at the sun directly for too long and you could live out the rest of your days not being able to see. That's so wild. Here's a fun question. So how many Earths do you think could fit inside the sun? In other words, how much bigger is the sun than Earth? I asked my wife this question the other night and she said 1,200. And I probably would have said less than that, maybe 100. I had no idea. I just know I like to see it go down. I've always, space is just the sky, all of it. I've always been awed by it, which space is actually a word I don't like, incidentally. It's okay in the context of stars, what we're talking about. But as you probably know, I have a real estate license. And probably my least favorite thing about doing real estate is showing properties. I don't mind it. It's just not in my top 10 things to do as part of a real estate deal. My favorite part is, you could probably guess, the negotiating aspect of it. But I always thought showing, like the showing part of real estate, is better done by women and gays. Why? Because a lot of it sounds like acting to me. It just sounds kind of fake. And if there was a drinking game called Space, where you'd watch House Hunters and drink every time they said the word space, like this is a great space, or this space has so much potential, I really like this space, you would get so drunk. You'd get way drunker than just sipping wine and watching Netflix and chilling. You ever play the drinking game called Bling Bling? Oh, you didn't go to school in the Dirty South? Well, I'll tell you how it works. You put on BG and every time they say Bling Bling, you drink. Which it can fool you because I don't think they say it for like the first minute and a half of the song. I took a poetry class in college. Speaking of rap music, you'll get where I'm going with this. But the teacher was an old white lady from Vermont. It was the worst class ever because everybody sounded like they were walking through a house on House Hunters, just making shit up to fill air, acting like they were making sense. And there was a girl in the class named Beatrice. But Beatrice was African-American, so when the teacher would do roll call, she would call her name, and I knew she was saying it wrong because there's not a black chick in the Dirty South who goes by Beatrice, so I would correct her. I would say, Beatrice, get it right, don't tangle and twist it. So me and Beatrice got pretty tight, but I wasn't tight with the poetry professor, not after correcting her. She didn't like that. So it probably explains the C I got in the class, that, and I'm not good at just making up stuff. And, you know, I don't hesitate to call BS. And sitting in that poetry class, it was like taking a wine class where the sommelier asks everybody what they taste, and people just start making a Camilla salad with croutons. It all sounds like BS. I know they made a movie about that with Sideways. It's pretty good. Like, oh, this hint of grape pairs nicely on the tongue with this astringent, drying sensation that satisfies the palate. Yet the earthy tones give it an oak flavor, but not so much the fruity flavor or the aroma of tannins that tickle the senses. It's all so demure. Fuck out of here. I was in Uruguay one time with the wife, and we went on a wine tour, and I got so hammered, I passed out in the back seat on the way back to the ferry. So there's a ferry that goes across the bay, the big bay near Buenos Aires, they call it a river, but it's one of those places that you never call by the English name again once you visit. It's never Buenos Aires again. There are a few places like that. So Edinburgh, Scotland, you can't visit there and continue to call it Edinburgh. It is forever Edinburgh. Remember back when MTV Cribs was popular? Remember how they'd organize all the drinks in the fridge as if that it's like that all the time? And the Gatorades are all stacked nicely with the energy drinks in one corner and 12 perfectly situated beer bottles in the other, knowing that they probably sent their assistant to Costco the day before and said, hey, make the fridge look neat, just like everybody else, because MTV Cribs is coming the next day. Nobody's fridge looks like that on a Wednesday, there's no doubt. Anyway, when I used to walk into a master bedroom, which I think we can call it that, right, nowadays? During the revolution, it had to be called a primary bedroom, so as not to offend slavery, I guess. You know, another thing we had to get rid of in our multiple listing service in Houston was marketing a property as being within walking distance of something, like walking distance to the park, because those unable to walk might be offended. Stuff got crazy there for a while. Here's a real estate tip for you while I'm thinking about it. So this usually applies to when you're looking for an investment property, not a primary residence, but a realtor might tell you to drive a neighborhood at night, and that way you get a better feel for things, whether it's crime ridden or whatever. What I tell investors is to look at the cars, especially the tires, inside the tires, and it'll tell you a lot. Hubcaps good, rims not so much. So have you come up with an answer on how many Earths you could fit in the sun? No Googling. You got a number in mind? Okay, let's see if you're right. The amount of Earths you could fit inside the sun is 1.3 million. I read one time, if the sun was a basketball in New York, just sitting on the ground in Central Park, the closest star on that scale to us is a golf ball in Wisconsin. No, not Wisconsin. Warsaw. I'm sorry. Warsaw, Poland, which is, we're actually headed there this summer. I've never been. It's going to be LIT. But on the scale I just mentioned, where the sun is a basketball in Central Park and the nearest star would be a golf ball in Poland, the speed of light is about 3 yards a minute. Or you can imagine the sun, our sun, not somebody else's weak-ass sun. They probably don't even call it a sun. Think about this. Whenever aliens are portrayed, sometimes they look like minions, right? With two eyes in the middle of their head. And we think that looks weird. That's alien. But did you know our eyes are very close to the center of our head? The forehead, it creates an illusion, I guess, and deceives us, fools us into thinking that our eyes are 3/4 of the way up our head. That's not true. And if you think that's weird, I would encourage you to stay away from psychedelics. Everybody will look like a tranny or a monkey. Just kidding. Everyone's hallucinogenic experiences are different. The visions that everybody has are different because we have different things in our minds, but a psychedelic experience can change your life in ways that you can't even imagine. Like killing things. Like I now have trouble killing anything. I've always found it interesting that every living thing, as far as I know, wants to stay alive. You ever think about that? It doesn't matter if you believe in eternal life in heaven or you're an animal who hardly thinks at all. The survival instinct kicks in for every living thing, everything that's alive. Even a cockroach, you'll see it scramble desperately to avoid the bottom of your shoe. But that is one thing I will kill. It's one of my responsibilities as the man of the house. But there's no telling what visions you'll have, and I can't recommend it enough. But consider this. If the sun were the size of a tennis ball, now put that tennis ball on a court. Let's stay in New York. So a tennis court in Central Park, New York City. One tennis ball in the middle of a court in Manhattan. On that scale, our nearest star would be another tennis ball on a beach in Key West, Florida. So the universe is pretty big. When I was 10, I was a left-handed pitcher, and I threw hard, but I'd always hit people. Not deliberately, but The kids at school didn't mess with me at that age because I could bean them when we played baseball. Like the kid who lived across the street from me, I hit him twice in the same game. Again, not intentionally. Where you at, Corey? I went to visit him in Chicago a few years ago, had a blast. He's got four kids, hit the wife lotto, grilled us up some steaks. It was wonderful. And what was so cool to see is his kids are growing up in the suburbs of Chicago the same way we did in Thibodaux, Louisiana. They had a little baseball field in his backyard, and we actually played a game with ghost runners and everything, just like back in the Dizzy. Anyway, so when I was 10, they called me the wild thing because I couldn't throw strikes. And I would look up at the moon when I was pitching, and I believe that it gave me good luck. Along with the coach's daughter, who would sit in a little lawn chair along the fence, that gave me a little oomph too. Which is something I think about, where like when you go to watch kids play, I remember what it was like when somebody was watching me and how it gave me a little something extra. So I try to make that effort when I can. They didn't even need to be watching me or be there for me, but just their presence alone added something. And I sure had way more adrenaline the more fans were in the stands. So parents, I encourage you to go to your kids' games. I was never more deflated than after my dad left when I was 11. But when he's there, you somehow run a little faster and throw a little harder, jump higher playing basketball. When I played baseball, my dad would sit in the same spot in my baseball games. And when I'd look up in the stands and he wasn't there, you know, he had left sitting, I knew he sat with one leg folded over the other and the other leg sticking out onto the bleacher below it. And it made me real sad and made it hard to play. I'll tell you about one of the hardest cries I ever had is during that time. He and I would watch Cheers on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, and I would sit on one side of the sofa and he'd be laying down on the other side with his feet almost touching me, just to give you a visual. And he would turn the lamp on behind him. And then the night of the final episode, the finale, this was May of 1993. I was sitting there watching it, and I looked over at the spot where he would normally be just about every night for years. We'd watch TV together. And he wasn't there, and the lamp wasn't on, and so it was dark, and I was sitting there by myself, and I just lost it. I've told the story of the girl I just mentioned. I've told a story about her before on the episode with my brother a few years ago. So to call her on the phone, I'd have to first talk to one of her brothers or her dad, my baseball coach, and I made the joke that, like, give me a break. I mean, you call me once in a while, but usually it doesn't work that way. You remember those days? This is back when teens and preteens hadn't yet got their own phone lines, so you'd have to ask politely their dad. Like, you'd have to ask as politely as you could to speak to their daughter. I really wish young boys still had to do that. There's some growth in that. In becoming a man, it helps you to build confidence and gives you more interaction with adults, because sometimes they'd talk to you for a minute, and that was great when they would do that, and it would kind of ease your nerves, unless they said something like, why do you want to talk to my daughter? But that was rare, and he was usually kidding. But nonetheless, that was a punch to the gut, and that feeling, I think, is good for a young man. But you'd call, and it sounds something like this. Hello, may I please speak to Ashley? And the kids who weren't raised well, they would call and say, Is Jennifer there? To which a dad might say, yeah. And then wait to see if the boy says more. And then if he said, can I talk to her? Then that dad knew, this kid is a loser and not good enough for my daughter. And he will subtly convey to his daughter that she's talking to a loser. And then he'd get on the phone. And who remembers the worst question by either party? And maybe this is me, maybe I'm weird, but I have never liked being asked, what are you doing? I got thrown out of class in high school one time because I was just minding my business one day, just doing my work. And the teacher walked up to me and said in a real snarky tone, what are you doing? And I said, what are you doing? And I was put in the hall. And my buddy E, he loved it. He was in class with me, and I'd see him on the weekends, like at a party, and he'd come up to me and say, what are you doing? That was his greeting to me. But does anybody else not like being asked, what are you doing? I don't know why that irks me, but I much prefer what's happening or what's going on or what are you thinking about? Got anything cool going on? Like, what are you working on? Anything. I don't know. Just what are you doing? I don't know. Like, I'm talking to you, man. I took time out of my day to give you a call. But for some reason, yeah, I don't know. I can't explain it. I think we all have words or phrases we don't like, right? For most of my life, I didn't like silly. And obviously, I don't like hissy fit. And it could be because I'm never silly or never throw hissy fits. But who knows? So kids say the darndest things. I'm putting my daughter to bed the other night, and I made a noise with my mouth, and it sounded like, chick-ew. And so she does it back to me right away. And she said, how do you do that? And I said, well, I don't know. How did you do that? You just did it too. And she started thinking about it, and I said, how is it that you can hear a sound that comes from my mouth, and you instantly know how to do it without thinking about it? And she started saying something, and I said, how did you just start saying that without even taking time to think about what you wanted to say? It just kind of came out like magic. And she goes, wait. You're weirding me up. It was perfect. I have another one. So one of the coolest things about being a parent is you get flooded with memories you otherwise wouldn't have thought about ever. Memories from when your dad did the same stuff you're doing now. So, for instance, if my daughter wakes up at 3 a.m. crying and I go in there and put the covers on her and I lean over and kiss her cheek and tell her goodnight again, I remember my dad doing that. Or like when just I remember him pulling up the covers in the middle of the night when I'm really tired and I remember that comforting feeling. And I can tell looking at my daughter, she has that too. And that's something I never would have thought about again if I didn't have the opportunity to do it. Or maybe a better example, the other night she was yelling, Mommy, and her mom was in the shower, so I go in there to see what she needs, and she says, I want some water. And I said, okay, and as I turned around to walk out the room, I can see that she starts to throw the covers off like she's going to come with me. And I said, no, you stay there, I'll get it. And when I was walking downstairs, I remembered being a kid and making that same request for water and getting to walk to the kitchen like long after bedtime. And it felt freeing. Like you just felt like you were getting away with something. But when my parents would say they were going to get it and I had to stay in bed, I remember being disappointed. So anyway, to young kings out there, I'll tell you what a guy I used to work for told me when I was living large as a bachelor in my 30s. He said to me, don't miss kids. And he was right. Rich, if you're out there, sage advice, my man. Thank you for that. I like to think I would have entered this phase of life to get the full human experience without that nudge. But it always helps when someone you respect suggests something to you like that. And I tend to remember it. So I say to you, I know how awesome bachelor life can be, but don't miss kids. Thank y'all for tuning in. I'll talk back at you soon. Please pray for our leaders, and God bless. Bye-bye.